from Alice in Wonderland. Alice, how long is forever? White Rabbit, sometimes just 1 second. Lola Adams attended a 3-day meditation retreat in the Florida Keys. At the end of those 3 days, she signed her name to the registry of the Temple of Contemplative Science. How does a person go from a novice meditation enthusiast to a member of a temple in just 72 hours? Jailhouse Video, Lola Adams and temple representative Michael Learn.
I need your help. I need it more than ever.
That's why I'm here. You're lost, Lola.
I know.
You haven't been to a circle in weeks. Are you meditating?
Yes.
Every day?
Every day.
Are you staying away from IFs? Lola?
Yes. My mother's visited. But, I've stayed away from everyone else.
You're lost, Lola.
I know.
Listen to me. You need to engage with your purpose. You need to go inward. Remember what brought you to TCS in the first place. Remember the love you found there with us. Remember why you stayed.
Stella Laughlin.
It is not brainwashing. People conflate the terms brainwashing and mind control, but it's important to understand that they're not the same thing. Brainwashing is at the far end of the mind control spectrum. It is a violent and physically aggressive process. The term brainwashing was coined in 1951 by a man named Edward Hunter, reporting what he'd seen occur in the Korean War. American POWs reversed their allegiances and sided with the Korean government. They also believed they committed war crimes that had never happened. The term comes from the Chinese word "si nao," which means wash brain. This was the first documented account of brainwashing, but not the last. Patty Hearst was a famous American heiress kidnapped by the Symbionese Liberation Army, a destructive political cult. She eventually changed her name, sided with her enemies, and committed crimes against the American people in their name. The difference is that with brainwashing, you begin in combative roles. You are a prisoner. You know the person in front of you is your enemy, and they harm you. Abuse, torture, rape, neglect, these are all very common in brainwashing techniques. When they force you to do things you don't want to do, your brain begins rationalizing the terrible things you're doing or enduring. It's less psychologically stressful to believe you deserve something and that there's a way out than to believe terrible things are happening to you for no reason and there's no end in sight. In essence, your allegiance shifts out of self-preservation. With mind control, at the outset, you believe you're in the hands of friends, so you're not braced.
Defendant Lola Adams.
So after a couple of days without much sleep and lots of meditation, I was moving around in a sort of brain fog, the way you feel when you're mentally drained. Meditation is supposed to rejuvenate and energize the mind, but that wasn't my experience. Sharon, the other participants around us didn't seem to feel as tired as I did. They seemed to be waking up and getting more out of the retreat than me. I was jealous. I thought I had all this potential. I was this special person the meta group up in Gainesville loved. I felt there was expectation for me to really grasp everything laid out for me in this retreat. And when I struggled, I blamed myself. I thought if I applied myself more or stopped trying so hard and allowed myself to let go, it would click. Of course, those things are contradictory.
Does that mean you were unhappy during your time at Largo?
Actually, no. I mean, I did have moments of self-blame, but I was in a very good mood. I thought I was finally doing something actionable that was going to change my life for the better. It made me feel proud. The meditation had a calming, peaceful effect, so I felt less stressed than I had in a while. And there was something I liked about escaping from my world for a while, just not thinking about my day-to-day responsibilities. While I was in this retreat, I was in this comfortable, ignorant bubble. And I stayed nice and chill like that. until day three, when things got more intense.
What happened on day three?
We embarked on another series of exercises.
What exercises?
In one, every individual took turns being lifted by the group.
Literally?
Literally. One person would lie on the ground, and then the entire group would move their hands beneath them and slowly lift them towards the ceiling. Ty was encouraging us to contemplate the words unity and oneness while we did this. We were lifted upwards, and sometimes Ty would tell the group to turn us or walk with us, held up in the air like that, eyes closed. We had to allow our bodies to relax and trust the group to carry us safely.
Was anyone dropped or injured?
No, it was fine. It was quite nice, actually. And a little bit of fun.
What was the next exercise?
Ty brought back the first exercise from night one. The one where we had each of us sit in a chair in front of the group and hold his gaze and answer his questions.
The one you thought you failed.
Yeah. So when it was my turn, I sat in the chair and everyone was watching and he was looking at me or through me and I was looking at him. And he asked me again why I had come there. And I didn't want to say I was lonely again because that didn't go over well the first time, but I suddenly didn't know what to say. I thought there was a right answer and I should know it, but didn't. And I didn't say anything. I just started crying. And he let me cry. For a minute, I just cried. But I wasn't looking away. Our eyes were still locked.
What happened then?
He asked me if I was hurting. And he hadn't asked anyone else that question. And I said yes. And I realized it was true. He asked if my relationships were whole and working. And I thought of my husband. And I said no. He asked me if my work was whole and working. And I was past deadline that week and behind on other projects. I said no. My home, no. My body, no. My serenity, no. And that's when I realized nothing was working. Where was the chapter in my life that was whole and working? What was I doing wrong? How did I get so lost and so broken down? By now the tears were streaming down my face, so he told me to close my eyes. And the last thing he asked me was, what was I feeling? And I said, I feel like I'm falling. This part is actually so beautiful to me. I have a lot of bad memories about what happened next, but this was a really beautiful moment.
Is there a question anywhere?
Lola, what was the beautiful moment?
Ty told everyone in the room to hold hands, and I heard them doing it. And Ty told me that it was okay to fall. Fall. They would catch me.
Your Honor, clearly we need a recess. The defendant needs some time to collect herself, and as it's already 4:40, I propose we reconvene.
cult expert Stella Laughlin.
I've explained the first element in the three-step change model is unfreezing. This means breaking down a person's core identity, making them question their choices, question who they are. And an important part of that is making them blame themselves. The new recruit at a destructive cult is taught, you are broken and you are incapable of fixing yourself. All answers lie with the group. You are at fault for your wretched life. The leader has the answers, and the group has the ability to help you learn them. What happened to Miss Adams in Largo is textbook.
TCS member and fellow retreat attendee, Mark Gibson.
I cared about Lola. We all did. We were there at that retreat to work on ourselves and to help each other. That's what we did.
Did you witness any efforts by the operators of this retreat to denigrate attendees?
No.
Did you witness any efforts by the operators of this retreat to confuse, trick, or otherwise manipulate attendees?
No.
Did you witness any efforts by the operators of this retreat to neglect attendees?
No.
Did any of the exercises Mr. Byman employed at this retreat make you uncomfortable?
No, look. I've been to company retreats, and I've gotta say, this stuff isn't much different from the team building exercises we did there. I found them helpful, and I found them comfortable.
At this retreat, did you ever witness Mr. Byman behaving inappropriately in any respect?
Absolutely not.
Following the retreat, Lola rode with Mark Gibson and two others back to her home in Gainesville, Florida, where her husband James had been waiting.
She was a goddamn different person. You'd expect some tiny bit of contrition. Maybe a sorry. She sauntered in like she'd been to the grocery store. And she was never the same after that. My wife goes away and 3 days later a bitch takes her place.
What aspects of her personality had changed?
She just ignored me. Her husband. Acted like I wasn't there. She lost a job because of that retreat, and I had to pick up the slack. Even though I knew she had money somewhere, stockpiling. Didn't matter. I had to pick up the slack.
Do you feel that the Largo retreat had a profound impact on your ex-wife's psyche?
It made her a worse person. She totally checked out. Couldn't care less about me or the house or any of it. She'd hole up in the spare room meditating for hours every day.
Every day?
Every day. Hours. She just wasn't there. Even when she came out of the room, she wasn't there.
A long-standing client of Lola's was a woman named Loretta Sheen. Lola managed the website of her retail jewelry business. Loretta typically Skyped with Lola twice weekly, corresponded by email daily, and drove down from Savannah monthly for strategy meetings with her whole team, Lola included. She met with Lola 2 days after the return from her Largo retreat and was called to testify at trial by the prosecution.
Thank you, Ms. Sheen. How did Ms. Adams' conduct or behavior vary from that you've known her to exhibit previously?
It didn't. She was as composed as she always was, up to date on the materials, knowledgeable about new digital trends. She presented a strategy for increasing our SEO results that day, one we wound up on implementing. She was herself.
This meeting occurred 2 days after she got back from Largo. Did she mention her Largo retreat?
She mentioned going down there, but she didn't call it a retreat. I was under the impression she traveled down for vacation.
Did she share any other information about her experience in Largo?
Just the most casual of comments. It was beautiful, weather was great, etc.
Did she seem glassy-eyed to you?
No.
Confused?
No.
No variations in her appearance, presentation, understanding, composure?
Objection. Compound.
Like I said, she was herself.
Lola did not go down to Largo and return as a robot. A person is capable of undergoing a profound personality change while projecting an image of normalcy. Loretta Sheen saw her after her return for a period of 3 hours. That's all. She saw before her the woman she was accustomed to seeing. She had no way of knowing that she was looking at a woman who'd just undergone the first step of mind control. having herself torn down and torn open until she was vulnerable to a new identity.
The defense has offered you no conclusive proof that there were any manipulative techniques during Miss Adams' retreat to Key Largo. The fact that she cried does not mean that she was manipulated. People cry in therapy, in acting classes, in yoga. People cry in movies. Affecting someone in a genuine and meaningful way is the goal of every introspective retreat. If Miss Adams had an emotional reckoning, I can only infer that's what she was down there to achieve. Why else would you attend a meditation retreat if you didn't want to experience something meaningful?
The destructive elements of mind control are so easily masked as innocent that the uphill battle is getting the public to understand and believe the dangers they impose. Destructive cults are growing in number and power because techniques are becoming more sophisticated and thereby harder to identify.
How do you address the contention that what Lola experienced at the Largo retreat was simply a well-intentioned emotional gesture?
Leon Festinger is a psychologist who put forth a theory of cognitive dissonance, which identifies three components of mind control. They are behavior, thoughts, and emotion. If you control all three of these things within a person, you control their mind. Human instinct does not allow these three components to be at war with one another. If they are in conflict, it is a highly stressful state to be in. So if you control one, the other two will seek to align themselves.
I'm a little lost. Could you give us an example?
Sure. If you are in a situation in which your behavior is controlled, say someone is coercing or pressuring you to steal, and you feel that stealing is wrong, you will become very stressed. You will be in an uncomfortable state. But if you start regularly stealing, eventually you'll begin rationalizing it. Well, that person has a lot of money anyway. My group needs the money much more. Stealing isn't really immoral if the ends justify the means. You will justify your behavior and consequently feel better about it. Behavior was controlled, thoughts followed, then emotion. The theory of cognitive dissonance works in any direction. It doesn't have to start with behavior. Destructive cult leaders understand this model, overtly or inherently, and they employ it to their benefit. Lola's emotions were impacted while she was in Key Largo. She felt guilty, scared, ashamed. Her thoughts then immediately followed. She thought she was a bad person. She was flawed. She needed help she couldn't give herself. And her behavior followed suit.
Before I left the house, Ty passed around a book. It was this beautiful leather-bound journal filled with names scratched in pencils and blue inks and black inks. He said his teachings could elevate us all to a more competent, happy state. We could practice with him and learn how to heal. Through unity in ourselves and with each other, we'd heal. He'd show us how. He had a temple called the Temple of Contemplative Science, because this was a science. It was measurable and scientifically based. He'd show that all to us. And we'd see ourselves by the merit of our own experiences. And he asked us to commit to ourselves by signing our names in the registry. We had taken the first step towards this beautiful, seductive idea of total wellness, and the next step was under his instruction at the temple.
What did you do?
I signed my name.
Sign away. Sign off. Sign out. Signing is rarely a beginning. More often, it's an end.
All right, I think as jury foreman, we all know why we're here. I think we really need to focus in on something that was important as a part of the testimony that we heard from Stella Laughlin. Do we all here understand the cognitive dissonance theory? Or do I need to kind of try to break it down?
Give us your interpretation.
I will. And, you know, once again, I'm an alcohol distributor. And while as a part of that game, I got to get into the hearts and minds of bar owners and restaurant owners breweries and everything, I'm not a psychologist. But let me just tell you what I think and understand it to be so we can all get on the same page.
Well, none of us are psychologists, so we're with you on that.
So we're all human beings. I think we can agree on that. Even Francis might even be able to agree on that without some kind of an argument. And as human beings,
Francis,
we have a behavior, we have thoughts, and we have emotions. Okay. If one of those get out of line, that causes us an incredible amount of stress. Mm-hmm. If our thoughts get out of line, even if our, you know, if our behavior and our emotions somehow stay in place, something is going to change within us to align our behavior and our emotions in order to bring our thoughts under control.
Okay.
So the idea here is if you control one aspect of a human being's thoughts or a human being's behavior or a human being's emotions, the rest of them internally will align themselves in order to reduce that stress. Therefore, in mind control, if you control a person's thoughts or you control a person's behavior or control a person's emotions, everything else is going to line up. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Let me give you an example of what's happening today. You look at the current political situation. Think about it, like some random supporter in the middle of the Midwest. So let's, you know, she is Republican. She's pro-life. She doesn't like abortion. So what does Trump do? Trump says, well, I'm going to send this pro-life Supreme Justice to the court. Right. So even if this woman finds Trump to be absolutely deplorable, she will vote for Trump so that way he can appoint that Supreme Court justice, so that it aligns with her views, and that then there will be someone who is pro-life in the. It's not necessarily about whether things make sense or not.
Well,
it's about
to take that to another level. Okay, that person in the Midwest who's a religious person who doesn't believe you should flander on your wife, who doesn't believe that you should sexually harass women, who doesn't believe that you should be a liar.
Why is it abortion?
Will align her thinking to be a Trump supporter.
Yeah.
Because of her
views on pro-life. Do you get that?
That's right.
Yes, I get that, but we're getting off the track, I think.
Right. It's just important that you understand.
We're not getting off the track. We need to understand the cognitive dissonance theory. We're not going to move forward until we all understand it, because I think it's vitally important.
It's a theory. It's aligning emotions with your actions. With your
attitude,
thoughts,
all of it.
All right.
One will lead to one. If one thing is off, everything else will adjust in order to reduce that state of stress.
So Lola was in a cognitive dissonance when she met Ty.
Okay, was she?
But excuse me.
That's a great question.
Excuse me. They gave an example of somebody who commits crimes or steals.
Okay.
If I recall.
Yes, they did.
And that at first you know, ooh, that's a bad thing to do. But after you do it repeatedly, you get good at it, you start feeling comfortable with it and you don't think it's bad.
You don't believe it's bad.
But I think that's a little bit of malarkey.
Well,
Wait a minute. I have an opinion about this.
Okay.
It's a theory.
Okay.
Criminals know crime is wrong.
You're right, but
continue to commit crimes.
Okay.
Your thoughts and feelings don't have to be aligned. It's comfortable.
Let me tell you something. That's incorrect. A criminal who is good at his job, the only way he's going to be good at his job is if he changes the way he thinks about his job and aligns it with his goals. That's the only way he's not getting caught.
And so he's choosing.
So
to
he
be
is
criminal.
Changing his thoughts.
He's choosing to change his thoughts.
Correct.
Yeah.
So can I ask a question?
Yes.
Choosing.
But then it becomes so embedded in their thought process that it becomes this blurred line.
I think the word choosing. I think you're right, both of you. Choosing means that you have free choice.
So, Campbell, how about when Lola chose to change her answer when she was doing the exercise? You know, when she was sitting, staring, making eye contact with Ty, the first time she says lonely and she got the wrong response from him. So she chose to change her behavior.
Or mind. She changed your mind, right?
But why?
to get the right appeal from Ty.
Well, I'm sorry.
He was cognitive dissonance.
Wait, hang on. I want to hear what Banks is saying.
She was trying to appeal to him, but that didn't mean that she truly believed what she was saying.
Let Banks finish, please. Go ahead, Banks.
Because of his reaction the first time, she knew that that was wrong, so she changed her response to align with his attitude when she gave him the wrong response the first time by saying she was lonely.
What made her do that?
Isn't that like somebody in a
class? Because he's affecting her behavior.
That's the need to fill in.
You're answering questions.
But she's choosing to be there to begin with.
And you say, well, is it C? Is it D?
But don't you want to fit in class too and feel accepted and feel smart and feel acknowledged?
Everyone wants to be accepted. That's a human nature.
100%.
Campbell, I think, listen, the fact that you're pointing out free will and choice is correct. But what we're talking about here is what is influencing her choices. Okay, right. We're all aligned here.
Well,
we're
wait a second.
Okay, I'll give you that.
Okay, great. Now, Van, you have said nothing. I'd like to hear your thoughts. Are you good on cognitive dissonance, or can we move on?
Like to give an analogy that I think applies here.
I love your analogies.
That is street gang. Street gangs have behaviors. They believe those behaviors are appropriate and okay in society. But if it includes killing another person, even if it's a rival gang who's threatening you, we punish them by law. They cannot do that, in spite of the fact that their cognitive dissonance, that they want to fit in with a gang, because that's how you survive in the streets.
A gang could be a cult.
Well, I'm not going to call it that, but I'm just saying that when you join a gang, you do want to fit in, okay? And so you go along with that gang's mentality and attitudes about what's right and what's wrong. Mm-hmm. But
it's still American law.
That's exactly my point. When you get into a situation where you have killed someone or your gang is killed and you're part of it, the state will say you're wrong and you're going to be punished.
Okay, so we all agree that cognitive dissonance was a factor.
Thoughts, behaviors.
Right, we get that was a factor.
Yeah.
But we're
deciding justifiable use of deadly force.
Well, one step at a time.
Yeah.
Well, can I offer something else?
Please.
Okay, so let's talk about, for another example, you were talking about news, right? Or Donald Trump or whoever.
Right.
Right? So think about this. You know, the news, it depends on what you choose to watch. You watch CNN, it's going to lean left. You watch Fox, it's going to lean right. So depending on which channel you pick in the first place is going to influence your thoughts, actions, and behaviors. But you chose to watch the freaking news in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think it's an excellent analogy.
So could that be considered a gentle form of mind influence, coercion, whatever?
I think so.
It's a process. It's all this, that, and the other. And yet it's still a choice to watch the news.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think we all agree with that.
Yeah, I think we all do agree with that. What about nothing? Something else from the testimony that struck me that I thought was really, it was very interesting to me, and I'd love your thoughts on it. The breakdown of the difference between brainwashing and mind control.
Mm-hmm.
Brainwashing is something that, I mean, it's from a Chinese word that literally means wash brain, and that's usually having to deal with torture, sleep deprivation, bad things. Bad things that are happening to you. Look at what happened to Patty Hearst. What happened to the Korean POWs. Streams.
Totally.
Versus mind control, which is, hey, we're all friends here. Hey, we're going to heal you. Hey, we're going to make you a better person.
Hmm.
So I want to ask everyone's opinion. Was she brainwashed or was it mind control?
Well, when you put it that way, what is the difference?
What do you mean? He just laid it out.
Violence. Yeah.
I'm saying that some people can believe that violence is a good thing, and some people can believe violence is a bad thing.
The Korean POWs did not think violence was good to them.
They were in war in the first place.
Okay. Just try to focus. Seriously, try to focus.
It's a place of this is good intention. This is us making you a better person. You're protecting.
Versus me beating the shit out of you to get.
What I'm saying is some people believe. You're not listening. That's why.
We are.
You're not making sense.
No, some people.
We're not. That's a masochist.
No,
that's
I'm saying. But it doesn't mean that
it's.
I'm saying that in this court of law that we're working in, some people believe that violence is good. Some people believe violence is bad in this world.
All right, normal
However,
people.
However, it's still a choice to believe violence is good or believe violence is bad.
Let me, this might be helpful. You're not listening. You're not understanding. Francis, let me help you with something. Okay, yes. Very simply, okay? This Florida statute that we're looking at, a person is justified in using deadly force if he or she reasonably believes. You need to start using the reasonable person standard on yourself.
Right. So,
a reasonable person does not think violence is a good thing.
I don't believe violence is a good thing. I know that.
So that's what we're talking about. We're talking about reasonable person. So stay in line with it. Now, was she brainwashed or was it mind control, Campbell?
Definitely mind control.
Van.
Mind control.
Mind control.
Mind Banks. Control.
Well, mind influence.
Okay, fine. Mind control.
Sure.
I do think that that distinguishing factor is important because of the – I do think that the role that TCS played here is important, okay? In the mind control aspect of it, the way I'm viewing it, you guys tell me if I'm wrong, but it does seem like you're there by choice. There's a free will aspect to
it. Yes.
Because they're being friends. It's not a Korean POW.
Right.
Patty Hearst was kidnapped.
It's a choice.
Yeah. Right.
Everything that happened up to that point in their lives put them in that position.
Correct.
Yes.
I totally agree with you.
Whether you put your socks on, whether you put your shoes on, whether you drove to the location, you know. And also,
it's all the same.
It's choice.
Force and fear is the difference. You asked, but what's the difference? The difference is force and fear.
Let me tell you why.
Choice is what we're debating.
Let me tell you where I'm coming from with this as an undecided person, and why there is reasonable belief versus not. This is where I'm stuck, and I know this is part of what we need to do here.
Hmm.
For some reason. If she was brainwashed, I feel like...
She wouldn't remember it?
No, let me finish.
Yeah.
I feel like if she would brainwashed, maybe I'd feel a little bit more sorry for her. Like, I guess I feel sorry for Korean POWs. I guess I feel sorry for Patty Hearst.
Traumatized.
Yeah. There's something about her choosing to be a part of this that's I don't care whether or not she quote unquote reasonably believed that that if her husband left that the world would end. I just don't find that reasonable.
I mean,
don't you feel bad for Scientologists?
Well, that's like sympathy versus empathy. You know, like you feel bad for it, but you have no stake in the thing.
But don't you guys feel bad for Scientologists?
Maybe.
I mean, I do.
No.
But I feel we're like talking about evidence versus sympathy.
Okay, wow. Emotions. I heard that line today.
That's
and
right.
And all of us are sympathetic.
Yeah, it
all of
sucks.
Us realize
right. She's in a shit position.
She is a right. wounded person.
Yeah.
She's
we're all
she's back where
insecure.
She started before she began the cult.
We all have sympathy.
Honestly.
But we have to look at evidence.
And we got
to
look at the statue.
Right.
Yes.
So but I think it's important to know how far we've come.
And how much... proof do we have? I'm still going back to that. We have,
but I think
no
we should like acknowledge the steps that we've taken forward, because I think in a lot of this it's easy to lose a lot of the steps in the chaos. But I think from my understanding, and I think if we all can agree on this and then continue to move forward, we all have in some way, shape, or form acknowledged that yes, this was some sort of cult, and that yes, Ty was some sort of shady person, and that yes, there
was
some sort of
Jesus,
mind control going on here,
basically.
Can we all agree on all that, though?
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, Jesus.
Because I think if we can agree on that, then we can move forward from some place. Because that's some kind of contextual foundation that we can all kind of agree on. We all think Ty's shady. We all think TSC is shady. And we all think that there's some sort of mind control element going on here. I think if we can agree on that, then we can start to move forward from there.
So
let's not backtrack on those arguments.
No, we already did.
I would also like to add... the term projection, which is used in psychological counseling, as humans, we have a tendency to project what we want someone else to be like, whether they are really like that or not. And I saw her doing projection with regard to TCS and specifically to Ty in her testimony.
But was she being reasonable? I keep going back to that. That's what I'm stuck on.
We should take a vote right now, and then we should talk about it later.
We need to go through every piece of evidence first, Francis. We haven't gone through everything yet.
And
that's
Campbell
true.
Wanted to look at evidence. I think we should look at the evidence of what was happening in that moment when she was making eye contact with him and crying, because to me, doesn't that sound like they're breaking her down? They're breaking down her spirit so that she can be built back up in the
form of influence?
In the form of their ideology.
So now they're breaking her down in a court of law.
Yeah. Do you guys mind if we take a quick break? I'm kind of overwhelmed with all this.
Okay.
Cool. Sure.
Thanks.
Now next time on Deliberations.
He was saying our church was evil.
Where did you get the gun?
So I pulled the trigger. Twice.
Today's episode. Jury, Rudy Sallow, Sherry Michaels, Mark Smeltzer, Kate Mullen-Wallace, J.P. Stanley, and Jim Donnelly. Courtroom, Katerina Tana, Ramondo Isom, Cooper Hardin, Cindy Lopez, Charlton Van Horn, and Megan Gillette. In today's, we're talking to Dr. Yanya Lalik, Ph.D., a sociology professor and author of several highly esteemed books about cult recruitment and experience. She was also a member of a political cult called the Democratic Workers Party, a cult whose members had the rare experience of overthrowing its leader. Don't miss it.